So we're just thrilled to have Jim Gaydon with us today. Jim was part of the founding of the gay liberation movement here in Madison. He was here, and he was a member of the first out gay group on gay organization in Madison called the Madison Alliance for Homosexual Equality in 1969. Jim,
what a dumb name that was.
Things got better.
Yeah, it got better. Things got better.
He was, he was involved in the grads, the queer grad student, or the, what was the gay lesbian grad student association?
No. Gay law student association.
Gay law student association, which is one of the first gay student groups on campus. Is through his work, Sarah, can we shut those doors?
Yeah, sure.
You know, through his work in law school, he helped lay some of the foundation for the Madison anti-discrimination policies, which were enacted in 1955. 75. I am not tracking today at all, Jim. Sorry.
That's okay. I was six. So you guys weren't even born. Maybe you were.
But. You were a babysitter.
So the anti-discrimination ordinance in Madison, which gave protection for gays and lesbians in public accommodations and employment in 1975, a bill that wasn't passed in New York, wasn't passed in San Francisco until 78, in New York City until 86, in Chicago until 87, and we passed it in 75. Jim was a member of the city council. Appointed the city council in 1976 and was elected as an out, came out after he was appointed, and I'll let him tell the story, but then ran and was elected for city council as an out gay city council member in 1977. The fourth openly gay elected official in the country. The fifth was Harvey Milk. And then continued to ride out, you know, the decade of the 70s on the city council. And again, you know, and then, you know, Wisconsin went on to become the state that had the first statewide gay rights ordinance in 1982. So a lot of, you know, we don't tell this history very much. We don't tell the history of sort of gay liberation as sort of what was happening in the Midwest. We tend to tell it as a coastal phenomena. But clearly in the Midwest, there was a lot that was happening that was preceding what was happening in the coasts. And Jim was a really integral part of that for over a decade, and we're thrilled to have him with us. Won't you please help welcome to Freedom, Jim Gaydon.
Samer says I'm supposed to inspire you, you young people, not you. You're already inspired. to get out there and get active in things, and hopefully some of the things I say can help you do that if you're not already doing it. But all I can really, I can't really tell you what you, I have no idea what's going on with people your age. I just don't have a clue. You know, I didn't have a clue when I was your age, so it's harder for me to think what's going on in your lives. Things have really changed, and to the extent that I've had any part of that change, I'm very proud of myself. So, and I'm very proud of the elders who have been beacons in the gay community for years because their son is gay, and they have been active in everything, and it's people like them that I look up to. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys. I see you in all the parades every year. Not every year, but you're there almost every year, aren't you, in the gay rights parades? Okay. I think I should sort of take a step back and tell you what it was like when I grew up, because that'll give you an idea of how far we've come. I was born in 1949 in a little town called Ontonagon, Michigan, which is in the middle of nowhere. I don't know anyone from Upper Michigan ever been there. Beautiful country, very backwards, like about 20 years behind everything. I don't think there's any gay rights ordinances in Upper Michigan right now. Probably won't be for another 20 years. But when I was growing up, we moved around a lot. I was never lived in the same house more than 3 years in my entire life. We'd always move in the middle of a semester, you know, like middle of third grade, we'd move to some other town or city. And middle of ninth grade, we moved to Wisconsin, so just kept going around. I never had a chance to make many friends. I lived in this little town called Alberta, which Henry Ford built in the middle of the woods. Henry Ford was very active in the UP. He went up there, and that's where he recreated. Made all his money down in Detroit, went up there, and he bought a lot of land, and he built this little model town. Then he donated to the university, and my father was working for the university, so I lived there for years. But it was really kind of depressing and lonely, and I don't know how many times I thought of just committing suicide, because I knew I was different. I knew I didn't fit in. I didn't quite know why. There was no literature to tell me. There was no one to tell me, you know, what's going on. I guess we'll let somebody in. Take a break.
While you're waiting, was your dad changing jobs? Or what was
it? Well, he was an inventor. Uh-huh. And while he was, when I was in kindergarten, we were living on the Michigan Tech campus in Houghton. And he had invented a machine to take the bark off of logs, because his father was a logger and spent 60 years logging in the woods. And my father used to work for him in the summers, you know, cutting logs and hauling them around and stuff. And the way they used to debark logs is they'd take this long pole with a little hook on the end and they just scrape it off, basically. And he thought there should be a better way of doing that, so he invented a machine called the debarker, which used pneumatic arms and stuff, and you throw the log in and it shaves all the bark off, and poof, it's ready for making into Charmin toilet paper. Because you got to take the bark off, or you have very scratchy toilet paper. So anyway, he moved around a lot, and we ended up moving to Manitowoc, because that's where they started building the machines, but that was a later story. Anyway, I was trying to tell you about what's growing up in Upper Michigan in the 50s. Very, very lonely for a gay guy. I knew there were probably other people. I'm sure there were, but you know, I didn't know who they are. There was. I remember reading one of the early books. Was it the Bond book? Maybe in the early 60s, one of the James Bond books. And there was some reference to one of their other spies who was a homosexual, and you could tell because he had a third nipple. And I'm going, I sat there looking to see if I had another nipple. I was like, you know, this is the first reference I ever heard that there was other, you know, gay people out there, so I'm sure we all had three nipples, and that's how you told us apart.
How old were you?
Oh, I don't know, 12, 15. But, you know, the kind of literature you'd read that had anything to do with gays was, you know, father comes home, finds son in bed with sailor, shoot son, shoot self. End of story. Real happy up things, you know. It doesn't make you feel very good about yourself when that's the only kind of crap you hear. And I think, and I seriously thought about suicide so many times when I was young, because I was just all alone, and I didn't think I'd ever be happy. I didn't have any friends. The little town I lived in, there was no one my age even, so it was just a very kind of sad, lonely time. And I think that's what made me vow to be open and honest about myself when I finally came out. It's like, I'm going to be myself. I don't want other kids to go through that loneliness where they think they're the only gay person in the entire world, and that's just so wrong, because so many people didn't make it through that. You know, or they, you know, figured they had to grow up and get married, and then they'd be cheating on their wives and having sex in the bus stops, you know, the way stations and the bus stops and that sort of thing, and that's their life, you know. They got their sex on the side. And then they pretended to be a happily married couple and raised kids and stuff. I have a friend now who's 78. He's still... You know, he's still married, and you know his kids are all grown up. But you know, and his wife pretends she doesn't know he's gay. But when he's with me, we talk about, you know, cute looking guys and stuff. So, but you know, that's the kind of life that was going on. It wasn't very friendly to the gay people, especially someone in the middle of nowhere. We moved to Manitowoc when I was in middle of ninth grade, and of course moving into a new school in a new state in the middle of ninth grade is not something I'd recommend. It's not good. Because everyone, by that time, in the middle of ninth grade, they're all, you know, got their cliques going and stuff, and here's this new person showing up, and just not a very
good. Gay or straight is bad.
Pardon?
Gay or straight.
Gay or straight, yes. Yes. But if you think you're the only oddball in the thing, it's kind of worse, I think. But what do I know? Everyone feels lonely, I think, when they're teenager, and people always feel they're the only one of who they are, which is kind of interesting nowadays. If I can jump ahead to present day, no matter how strange you think you are, you can find someone just like you on the internet. You can join a group of people like you with like interests. It's just such a fascinating phenomenon, something that should be studied in social school, but I'm not going to worry about it. Just say. Anyway, then growing up in Manitowoc, I graduated from Lincoln High School in 1967. Still a virgin, still thinking I was the only gay person in the entire world. And although, you know, in high school there's there are always these rumors about the French teacher, Monsieur Labud. People behind the back called Pinky Labud. And turns out later he was gay, but, you know, and there's always there was that sort of like, is he or isn't he kind of stuff. But still, I didn't, you know, there's an underground gay community in Manitowoc, but I didn't know who they were. Eventually ran across some of them and, you know, made some friends, but anyway, in 1969, I came out what I call the hard way. I finally made my first real true friend. His name was Steve, and I just fell in love with him. I just wanted to be with him. I didn't want to have sex with him. I wanted to be with him. You know, I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him. I was hoping we'd go out in the woods, you know, and be loggers or something, and, you know, if the sex came, that'd be great, but I just wanted to be with Steve. And then he moved, he went up to 1969. I went to 2 years at the Extension in Manitowoc, the UW Extension there. 1 year it was UW Green Bay Manitowoc County Campus, which is easy to say. And the other year it was something else, I don't know. We called it Stench. But so I stuck in Manitowoc for an extra 2 years after graduating. And that was until 1969. In 1969 I wrote my friend Steve a letter explaining how I felt about him. He had gone off to school in Michigan Tech, of all places, the campus I went to, kindergarten. And explained how I felt about him. And he freaked out and sent that to his girlfriend, who sent it to her girlfriend, who gave it to my girlfriend at the time. Who, you know, so everybody had read this letter, knew my feelings about Steve, but nobody told me. So here I was, coming out to the entire, you know, little community I lived in, but I didn't know it. So anyway, then I got to move to Manitowoc. I drove to Madison once. Drove a friend down to Madison.
You didn't get a response from him, by the
way? No, he never really responded very well to it. He was scared. I don't know. He just... Last I heard, he was married and living on the East Coast somewhere, so that was a long time ago. Anyway, Madison, drove halfway around the square. I was just so in awe with the place. I'd never been in before. I got two tickets. I went through two red lights driving around the square going, wow, cops stopped me. Gave me two tickets for two red lights. I was like, oh, really? There were red lights? I didn't see you. I still fell in love with Madison because it's just, this place, this city, is just such a special place. It really is. You know, and there were some pretty tense times in the 60s, in the late 60s, early 70s, with the anti-war movement and the riots and the cops and nasty things going on. But I just fell in love with the city. I know this is a place I can be, so I moved here. I had been going to be an architect, so I was taking classes at the Extension in Manitowoc, you know, 18 credits of calculus, 18 credits of physics, 6 credits of engineering mechanics. God, engineers are boring. Sorry, no offense to any engineers here. The engineering class I was with was like, oh my God, what's wrong with these people? You know. Anyway, the only school for our architecture at the time was in Minnesota, and they had reciprocity, so I figured I'd be moving to Minnesota and going to college there. But I fell in love with Madison and said, no, this is where I'm coming. I'm coming here. So I came here as a junior and had to switch majors because there was no architecture school, and found out all these requirements for letters and science. And the point at the time was you're supposed to graduate within 4 years, and if you can't do that, there's something wrong with you. I mean, that's kind of the idea of college. Do your 4 years here, and then you go somewhere, off to your life. You don't really stay in Madison. That was the sort of atmosphere of it all. So I figured I had 2 years to finish, to get a degree in something, and I was looking through the letters and science books, and I realized I had all these credits of language, which I had never had one. And I was going to be an architect. I didn't need language. and I ran across Hindi, 7 credits a semester. And that's how I ended up with a degree in Indian Studies, and that's where I know Joe Elder from. And I'm so surprised to see him walk in the door today, because I was expecting a bunch of young people, and now it's nice to see someone who was a mentor to me.
That's right.
So, it's cool. Anyway, all that's aside, when I got done, I met Randy. I met Randy at it's one of those cute meets. I met him at a VD clinic. Meet your lover at a VD clinic. Anyway, we were both working there. And we met one day. It was called the Blue Bus. And at the time, it was on State Street. They had moved out of the bus. There actually was a Blue Bus. Yeah. Moved out of the bus. They moved onto State Street above Oriental Specialty. I don't know if that's even still there anymore. I think it might be. But they moved up there. I went there one night to volunteer. I was volunteering. Went there one night, and Randy showed up. Randy had just moved here from Colorado. He was also volunteering. And there's a huge snowstorm. And there weren't any customers, any people coming in because of the snowstorm. So there was only the four of us working, and we decided to play cards. And we're sitting there playing hearts. And I kept trying to make him win, and he kept trying to make me win, it turns out. And we realized we were like this. And he moved back to Colorado because he couldn't stand Wisconsin. He didn't like it. It was so gray here. Colorado, it's sunny all the time. Sorry for if all this is boring you, but I'm sort of telling you where this I'm all coming from on this. He moved back to Colorado, and we corresponded while I was finishing up law school. And I moved out there to live with him. And while I was in law school, this was after I taught law school, but while I was in law school, I met some great people who I was going to school with, and we formed the Gay Law Students Association. And he likes to give me credit for passing the ordinance, but that was some other people in the Gay Law Students Association. Some wonderful women whose names I'm blocking on right now. They were the main people who worked on it, and they got the city to adopt it. And we did some other things. There was a lot of backlash going on as ordinances were getting passed, in various cities. Miami passed an anti-discrimination ordinance. And then the opposition started coming out of the woodwork. Anita Bryant, I don't know if you know who she is, but she was the orange juice queen and a religious singer. She sang some beautiful music. She had a great voice, but she, sang Christian music, as it were. And then she decided that this was wrong. It was against the Bible, and homosexuality was wrong. So she started a campaign and in Miami to reverse the ordinance and, get enough people to vote to get the ordinance repealed. So that was going on. We had our own version of that here, and I'll tell you about that later. But the Gay Law Students Association worked to make sure that our ordinance couldn't get repealed. So we did a lot of legal research, and it turns out you can enact legislation via referendum in Wisconsin, but you can't repeal legislation versus by referendum. So they couldn't repeal our ordinance by vote. But we did the groundwork for that to make sure that that couldn't happen. So that was excellent. Anyway, I got done with law school.
What was the climate like in a law school? Did you get much out of it?
I stayed away from the law school as much as I could because it was a bunch of lawyers. Sorry, law students. A bunch of people I didn't want to spend a lot of time with. I worked my way through law school in the Ratzkeller. So I worked there for 4 years. 1 year before law school and then 3 years during law school. And that's where I spent all my time.
What led you to decide to go to law school? You didn't like lawyers?
I had this degree in Indian Studies.
Great.
Well, it's a great degree, and I really appreciate it. And I was actually all set to go in the Peace Corps to India, because that was a way of getting to India, for I wanted to go to India.
Yeah.
They sent me to a dentist, because they want to make sure you're healthy, because there's no dentists out there, for one thing. No dentists in the middle of places they send you. And it turned out I had some gum problems, and they didn't want to, they had me all set up to go to India, and then they said, you can't go because you're going to have some gum surgery, so we can't send you to India. And actually, that turned out to be really good.
They do have medicine in India.
Well, I would have been on the border of Bangladesh during the war.
Oh, not cool.
So I was really glad I didn't go. I look up Bangladesh sometime. Nasty business, that. Anyway.
And the Peace Corps was terminated as a result of that war.
Was it?
Yeah. You would not have stayed out there.
Oh, okay. But, you know, it was right on the border. I was within like 10 miles of the border. They had the place all picked up where I was going, so I was glad I didn't go. Anyway, I ended up going to law school. So I thought, well, now what do I do? Took a year off. I graduated in 71, and what do I do? So I thought, well, I can try and get into law school. So I tried and I got in. And I figured this, I never wanted to be a lawyer, but I figured there's lots of directions you can go from get that law degree. You can do anything you want, basically. So politics, which I never really thought of either, fell into that by accident, which I was going to explain in a minute. But all kinds of opportunities open if you have a law degree. So I applied, got in. I took the LSATs, and you know how they. If anyone's thinking about going to law school, there's a practice book. I don't know if they probably there's classes now. I'm sure there's a different way to do it. I took the practice LSATs three times, and every time I did about 100 points better. I don't think they're not even on the 100 scales anymore. They're on some other scale, but I got better and better at it, taking the test, because that's really what they're testing. Can you take the test? And so I eventually, when I took it, I got a 605 out of 700, and that was enough to get in because I was in state. And my wonderful degree in Indian Studies wasn't probably going to pay off very well unless I wanted to replace Joe Elder as a professor at the university. So anyway, that's how I went to law school. Met some people, Gay Law Students Association. We worked on the ordinance. We worked on keeping Anita Bryant's type from repealing our ordinance. I got done with law school, moved to Colorado to live with Randy, and it turns out that we couldn't live together. I love the man dearly. I still email him like two or three times a week. You know, we're still really close, but we know we can't live together. And this was the person, you know, you ever get this thing in your life, you're going to meet someone that's going to be the love of your life, and you're going to just, that's going to be it, you know, you're going to be happy the rest of your life with this one person. Well, I met that person. Guess what? We can't live together. We can still be friends, and we can still live each other. We can't live together. So I moved back to Madison after 6 months. So that was in 1975. And I moved in. I had a group of friends I knew from the Ratzkeller, and one of them, Lisa Winnenberg's mother, had a house on Gilman Street, and I moved in there with Lisa and some other friends. And Lisa's mother was on the city council for the next district over, District 4. And an opening came up for District 8, which is where I lived on Gilman Street. And at that time, it was Langdon Street, State Street, and the dorms up to, like, Cronsage, I think. You know, so those dorms over there, but not these. Elizabeth Waters, ones around Trip Commons, those ones over there. They were all in the 8th District. And the person who had been on the city council there retired. He said he retired so he could go to law school, but he was going to go to law school in Milwaukee. So there were 6 months left on the term, and the city council was taking applications, and anyone who lived in the district could apply. So Lisa's mother talked me into applying, and I, you know, filled out the form, and she, of course, she knew I was gay, and a handful of people on the council knew I was gay. How they did it, and this is the last time they ever did that, they voted. They had to elect someone. Everyone got to present, get up there. It was one night, one very long night. Everyone got up to do their presentation of you know, themselves and why they should have been. Oh, I forgot there was a step. After I came back, I had gotten appointed to the Equal Opportunities Commission because they had this gay rights ordinance, and they wanted a gay person on the commission. And I I was available, and I just got done with law school, didn't really have a lot going on. So I'd opened my private practice, so I got appointed to that. So I was on the EOC when that council thing came up.
Who was the governor at that time?
Governor.
Was it Tony Earl?
Lucy? Before Earl. It wasn't Earl.
Lucy, probably.
Lucy, yeah. Or was it Knowles? No, I don't. I don't know. It all blurs together, you know. But I remember that night because I had also been in the middle of a two-day federal trial. I was defending Ben Mazel. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's a local radical who had been charged with a federal offense of assaulting a member of Congress, because during the election. 72, I think. Skip, was it 76? It must have been 76. Scoop Jackson was running for president of the Republican Party, and he showed up at the airport to shake hands, and Ben spit on him. And there's this award-winning photograph of Skip, of Ben spitting, and the senator with, you know, spit all over his face. And some guy from the State Journal won a Pulitzer Prize for that picture. And that was the end of Scoop Jackson's career, too. You know, once you're spit on, it's like things go from bad to worse. So I was defending Ben. I had been his lawyer right up to the trial, but I hadn't done a federal trial, much less a federal criminal trial before. So Mark Frankel, who ended up being a circuit court judge, who had been my legal writing professor at school, law school, he was my writing teacher. Wasn't really a full professor, but anyway, he did the trial, and I was second chair of the trial, so did this trial all day, and that night we went to the city council meeting, and the thing took like 6 hours, because everyone got to speak, and then they had the first vote, and then they saw there were like 13 people applied, and then they had another vote, and then they knocked off the bottom two, then they had another vote, they kept voting until it was down to like two people. And I was one of the last two there. And the city council, there was, I'm trying to remember the exact number, but I would say 4 or 5 of them knew I was gay, and the rest had no idea who I was, really. But I was sort of the compromise character, because there was this guy, lots of those, the right-wingers on the city council, thought was too far left. And then there was a bunch of other people, some people who were just crazy. One guy applied. He gets up. It's wonderful. It was just wonderful. He gets up there, and he points at some of this old codger, always at the city county office, and he points at Michael Langer, who was a landlord in town, and kind of a sleazeball. He goes, "There's Michael Langer." Points right at him. He says, "He shoots pigeons in the backyard. He strangles squirrels. He rapes women." And he just goes on and on. That was his speech for getting on the city council. So
that's clearly a law and order guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's all he did, is rant about Michael Langer for like. I'm laughing my ass off because I know half of it's probably true. This guy's really kind of creepy. You know, there were women who rented from him who said they thought he was peeking in their windows of their bedrooms and stuff. So, yeah. Oh, sorry, Michael. He's out there somewhere still. But anyway, they finally came down to two people, and I won it on the last ballot. And this is my sort of back end way of getting on politics. And the next day, I wanted to be honest about, you know, I said, so I had an interview with the Daily Cardinal, and I said, "Hey, there's two things that are important to me. I'm gay and I'm a vegetarian, and I'm not trying to proselytize and want everybody to be gay or be a vegetarian, just telling you who I am." And then everybody knew. And then I had to run for election, 6 months later. And that was the fun part. There were 4 or 5 people running, and there was a runoff, and I ended up being, you had to narrow it down to 2 after the primary. And I was running against this guy named Rob Estka, who was a male cheerleader for the UW. And at that time, male cheerleaders were kind of looked at suspiciously, you know, because there weren't male cheerleaders, really. There was like 2 or 3 of them, you know. And, you know, because he was people were kind of suspicious of him. But they knew I was gay. And I had to go to all the dorms and all the frat houses. And I got good receptions at the co-ops, because I was living in a co-op at the time. I got good receptions from them. But
which co-op?
I lived in Nottingham then, but I had been living in Stone Manor before that, which is named something else now. Anyway, one of my favorite stories is, and I told that to the person who just interviewed me for the paper. I go in this one frat, and they're having dinner, and everyone's sitting around in there, you know. And the person who had invited me was the head of the fraternity. What do they call him? I don't know. Anyway, the head honcho of the fraternity. So he takes his spoon and he hits it up against the glass. All right, listen up, everybody, listen up. And then he introduced me, and you know, I gave a little spiel about what I was running and what I stood for and what, you know, what I believed in. And I didn't mention being gay, but it's not a secret. And then one of the guys steps up and goes, Jim,
yeah,
I have a question, okay? There's a rumor going around that you're gay. Well, yeah, that's not a secret. The secret is I'm a Packer fan. Because the Packers were terrible then. I mean, nobody watched them. The Packers were just terrible. And they all laughed at that, so I kind of broke the ice with them. But going to the rest of the dorms was a very interesting experience. This district, there's one really good thing about representing it. No matter how many people you make angry, they change every year. Everybody changes. They all move on, move away. You know, lots of new people. And let me tell you this about politics. No matter what decisions you make, and you always have to come down and you have to vote yes or no on something. You have to make a decision. And every decision you make, a third of the people are going, yay. The other third going, yeah, what are you doing, you stupid jerk? The other third don't give a crap. All right. Now, you make a new decision, and you've got a different third of the people upset, and a different third happy, and a different third not caring. And so it's really hard to stay in politics and not piss people off at some point, unless you're really just vanilla, you know, and don't do anything, which is kind of useless as far as politics goes. But anyway, I filled out most of my term on this. I got elected. It was close vote. I actually lost all districts in thirds, and I lost this third by a couple hundred votes. And that's because at the time, you know, it was a lot of students like you who never met a gay person in their entire life. I got to tell you, I had some wonderful people who ended up, you know, straight people who worked on my campaign, who lived in these dorms, who had never actually met a gay person. They had no idea, you know, that there were such a thing. And they met me, they liked me, they helped me on my campaign. And every once in a while, I still see one of them, and they'll go, Jim, thank you very much. That was really open, eye-opening. I really enjoyed working for you. And I'd go talk to people, and they'd go, he's gay. And I go, I don't care. You're electing him because of what he votes for, not who he sleeps with. That's kind of attitude. So I was really grateful for that. But so I won my 2 years. And there wasn't a quota. You know, I never had a gay agenda. I just wanted to be me and be honest. And there's so many things going on in politics. You just do, you know, you do what comes up. My big fight was over muskrat. Arby's, when they tried to move onto State Street. I mean, there were all kinds of things to fight about, but. You know, the ordinance was there, and Anita Bryant and her friends couldn't touch it. I got to tell you about our local Reverend Dylan Baugh. I probably never heard of him. Maybe you do. You probably recognize the name from the papers. He was this sleazeball preacher who moved up from like Illinois or Indiana, opened up a little sort of church on the north side, and was trying to make a name for himself. So he was all trying to get he was starting this whole movement to get the gay ordinance repealed, and, you know, that was his shtick. And he, he's right out of, you know, central casting. It was just so beautiful. It's like you couldn't come up with a better creepy person to be a preacher and doing this crap. I remember he actually got one of the city council, or he got a petition that he sent to the city council saying that we should withdraw the ordinance, the city council. And the first time something like that comes in, you refer it. And we refer it to the Equal Opportunities Commission. And then it comes back to the council with a recommendation from the commission. And of course, their recommendation was, get out of here. This ordinance is working fine, you know. Stop it. But that night, when the city council was going to talk about it, Dylan Baugh shows up. And the council chambers, I don't know if everyone's ever been there, maybe for a traffic ticket or something, but that's where you go. And there's the big thing where the mayor sits, and there's a wall behind him, and there's a little vestibule behind that where the front doors are. And I was going out to get a drink of water or the bathroom or something. I walk into the vestibule, and there's Dylan Baugh with two goons, a goon on either side of him, big guys in suits. And I go up to him and I go, "Hi, Reverend Dylan Baugh, I'm Jim Yaden." And I stuck my hand out. And the guys on either side of him went like this at the same time into their coats. And I'm going, these guys are armed. Jeez. It was, oh God, it's right out of a movie. They go like that, and I'm going, and he goes, "I know who you are." I went, "Oh, okay, well, good to have you here." And I walked past. That was kind of freaky. It was something that should have been captured on film. I just loved it. But of course, when something in front of the city council, people talk about it, you know, and then you do a vote, basically. So, but they give a public hearing. So there was a public hearing, and Dylan Baugh spoke, and a lot of other people spoke, and that took like a couple hours. But at the end of it, they were going to call for a roll call, and I looked around and I said to the mayor, I said, "Move to place on file," which means thank you very much. We'll just put it on a file. And the mayor said, "Second?" After somebody seconded, I said, "All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? One no. Okay. Done." Paul Sogin was the mayor. He was so wonderful. He handled it so well. He was just like, "Okay, fine." And there was never a roll call on it. Until then, the one person who was the more conservative of the council hadn't been there the night, got it brought back up the next time because he hadn't been there, and we re-voted on it, but it was not a problem. The ordinance.
Was Dylan Baugh there the second
time? Dylan Baugh was not there the second time.
No. And the move to file means it's not, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, thank you very much. We'll put it in the file. But the whole city council is like, "Oh, sure, okay. Let's not even vote on this. Let's just put it on file." I was so high that night. It was just by the way they had. It was like, "Hey, these are my cronies." Well, there was another real conservative person on the council. Her name was Jean something. I'm trying to remember it now. It's been a long time. And her pastor was another pastor who sort of had Dylan Baugh's agenda, but wasn't an evil person. He just truly believed in the Bible, and there shouldn't be gays, and you know, they shouldn't be doing what they're...
Was it Richard Pritchard?
Richard Pritchard. Richard Pritchard. Yeah. I had respect for Pritchard, because he wasn't, you know...
I have none.
Well, I had some.
I've been fighting with him all
those years. Oh, okay, yeah, Richard Pritchard.
Race relations.
Yes, yes. Yes, but at least he was, I felt he was honest, coming honestly by it, or Dylan Baugh was just doing it to get publicity. I'll get a follow-up on Dylan Baugh in a second. But anyway, Gene arranged a meeting between me and Pritchard and her. And just the three of us in a room. And then we talked about, you know, the whole ordinance and stuff like that, and at the end of it, Pritchard was, of course, not changed at all. And Gene just looked at him and said, "I can't stand with you on this one, no. Sorry." That was that also felt really good. Here's one of the most conservative people in the city of Madison on the city council, and she was like, that's bullshit. I'm not going with that. anyway, Dylan Baugh. Dylan Baugh eventually, what did he do? He beat a kid or something. He spanked a kid. It wasn't his kid. It was some kid that was in his congregation. And that made papers, and here's a picture of it that got in the paper of a kid crying on the stand, this little 8-year-old boy just bawling on the stand. That was the end of Pritchard, or Dylan Baugh. He sort of got run out of town on a rail after that. So that was a good thing that happened. So that was our own version of Anita Bryant. Let's see what else happened. I made some notes, and I want to make sure I mentioned everything that happened. I got in the paper various places because I was openly gay. I was the first one in Wisconsin that was openly gay, first elected official. So that made the papers, and I got some really... Pardon?
What about Dick Wagner?
Dick Wagner was long after me. Yes. Although he was a more prominent person because he was a head of the county board for a while and stuff like that. Anyway, I used to get this strange mail from people. Some really lonely people would, thinking they were the only gay person in Iowa or wherever, would write me letters, and I'd get those really heartbreaking kind of things along with death threats. I kept a file. I kept it at the city council office for a while. Just said threats on life, and I just when it's one came in, I just stick that in there, in case anything ever happens to me.
How many of them were identifiable? Addresses, names.
The ones that were identifiable were sort of not direct threats, more like indirect threats. Like the head of the CC Riders sent me a postcard saying he had donated blood in my name in case I ever needed it. That was a local motorcycle group. That was more about political differences than gay things, but, that one I actually went to the police with, and I just in case, something did happen to me, I wanted a record that was out there. This guy donated blood in my name in case I ever needed it. And then, as you all know, Harvey Milk got shot. That was, I think, on a Monday, and the Tuesday night was the city council. Maybe it was Tuesday. Maybe he got shot Monday, and Tuesday it was all the news. That was kind of disturbing. I said, I kept thinking that could have been me. I didn't have the notoriety he did. Maybe it was a bigger city, but it certainly could have been me. There were enough. Nowadays, I think that I take those kind of death threats a little more seriously. But back then, I didn't really take them very seriously. I just had to stick them in the file. But when Harvey got shot, that was kind of devastating. And how many have seen the movie Milk? How about here? I have not seen it yet. I've been waiting till it came out on DVD so I could watch it in the privacy of my own home, because I think it's going to be very personal for me. So I don't want to be in a public place when I see it. I just ordered it yesterday along with Slumdog Millionaire. I figured those are two good movies again. So I'll let you know. But is it in the movie? Did they talk about the gay riots after Harvey White? Not was Harvey White was
Dan
White. Dan White was acquitted. Dan White was a guy, for those who haven't seen the movie, Dan White was a guy, former police officer, who shot Harvey Milk and hit Mayor Moscone. And although people kind of forget that Moscone was murdered, the mayor was murdered too. The day he got acquitted, the night Milk was killed, there was just this outpouring, and there were candlelight vigils, and the whole city was in mourning. And then when Dan White was acquitted on the Twinkie defense, and he I don't know if that came out in the movie, but that was his defense, that he had had too much sugar. What kind of defense is that? So when that verdict came down, there were the gay riots. People were mad at the cops, because the cops were really model-coddling him, because he was an ex-cop. So there was a lot of animosity towards the San Francisco Police Department, and they burned a lot of cop cars that night and stuff like that. I haven't seen the movie. But I know that they probably didn't include what happened after that. It was either the next night or a couple of nights later, the cops rioted. And they went down to San Francisco, and they went to the gay bar section, and they smashed all the windows in the bars, and they went and they beat the crap out of anybody who was in the bars that night. Just beat the crap out of them. That was their revenge for the cop cars getting burned. So, I don't know if that made the movie. Did that make the movie? Yeah. That's part of history, yeah. People need to know about.
So, Jim, what was your response when Harvey was assassinated?
Well, that was, I actually, we had had this fight about on the city council. The first 5 minutes when I first got on the council was an opening prayer, and we rotated who got to do the prayer. And we all said, a bunch of us said, hey, you know, separation church and state, let's not do a prayer, let's do something else, let's get rid of it, have a moment of silence or whatever. But anyway, the compromise was that we could each say what we wanted to say when it was our turn. And it was not my turn that night, it was somebody else's turn. But I begged him to let me do the opening. And I just a very poignant night for me. I said, yesterday there were 5 elected gay, openly gay elected officials in the country. Today there are 4. And I don't know how many good mayors we have, but I know we have one, and the world is one the less. And then I asked people to bow their heads and, you know, be thought for the people of San Francisco. And that was just, that was a very moving moment for me. Anyway. You know, I'm so glad I didn't commit suicide when I was a kid. I'm really, really glad. I have had some fantastic lovers in my life, wonderful people that I would never have had the chance to meet, much less lovers with. A couple of them were women, not lesbians. I have made some great friends. I stumbled into, by living across the street from what was Mother's Pub on Williamson Street, stumbled into a group of guys who had grown up together in Madison, a group of straight guys, who had been friends since they were in grade school, you know. And I didn't have any friends in grade school, much less high school, you know, so until I was really late. And they adopted me and I adopted them, and we have been the best of friends since then. And it's so cool to have friends. Because friends will get you through the time of no lovers a lot better than lovers will get you through the time of no friends. Friends are so important. And that's one of the things I want to say to young people. Make friends. Make lovers too. And, you know, you might not find the person who's going to be the person in your life, but so what? There's more. You know, things didn't work out with Randy and I. So what? We're still friends. I've met some great people since then. I've had some great lovers. My present situation, I'm actually living with a straight guy. We've been sharing a house for like 12 years and raising dogs together. And I have my friends on the side, and he has his friends, and it turns out just a comfortable relationship. You know, he's been married and had kids, so he doesn't need to go through all that. It's kind of odd, you know, when people think, we don't care what people think, but it's kind of neat. Trying to explain it to somebody, though. You know? People always say, well, you guys must be lovers. Well, no. Sorry, that's not how it works. The friends that I made, that I was a little group of friends I was talking about, grew up in Madison. I've been going camping with them the first week in June every year for the last 27 years. We played broom ball together for 25 years, and I've retired. We started the first fantasy football league in Madison, the very first one. We started that here in Madison. Of course, that's now a big thing. I kept that for years. I'm retired from that, too. I retired from broom ball. I don't know if anyone know about broom ball? played it? You play on the ice. It's like hockey, except you got shoes, and you got a broom, and you got a ball.
Your nose looks pretty straight.
Pardon?
Your nose looks pretty straight. You smacked
it. Yeah. I broke a finger once, but that was all. You don't really get... It's not like hockey where you hit with a puck, you know, ball. But it hurts if you get hit with it. I retired from broom ball the same week Brett Favre retired from football, but he got all the press. I don't know why.
And he came back.
He came back. Well, I'm not going back. So, like I said, I don't really know what's going on in politics. I mean, in the gay politics right now. I don't know what you got kind of situation you people are facing. I know things are different. It's so wonderful to see gay characters on TV, and there's role models, good and bad, out there. And the thing that really I found so devastating as a kid, just being alone, there's a lot more opportunity now for people to express themselves, be who they are, and that's so fantastic. I was walking the dogs the other day on Jennifer Street, and there were two guys walking towards me holding hands, and I was going, great, just great. I love Madison. I love that things have changed so much. But the thing I do want to say is that it could change back. We do have enemies. They're out there. They're working right now to try and undermine a lot of the stuff that has changed. They'd rather see all the gay people back in the closet. They want abortion illegal. They don't want to give anybody any information about birth control. You know, they want to teach abstinence. And they're out there. And they are, right, the thing they have been doing lately is they've been stacking our Supreme Court, or trying to. They put Annette Ziegler on the court, who is just the Anita Bryant of today, basically, as far as I'm concerned. This is our Wisconsin Supreme Court. Everyone heard about Iowa? You heard about Iowa? The Iowa Supreme Court unanimously said that their constitution does not allow discrimination against gay marriage, and therefore gay marriage shall be illegal by April 25th. End of story. Iowa. Pardon? I'm going to mention that. I'm going to mention that. Tuesday, there is an election. That's something you can do right now, right here in this world. On Tuesday, you can vote. If you weren't planning on voting, go do it. Because there are some friends and their enemies out there.
If she doesn't win, you're in trouble.
Who?
Shirley
Abramson. Abrahamson. Yes. I said it wrong. She's on the Supreme Court. She is the Chief Justice. She's a wonderful, wonderful person. She's a friend. The person the right wing is trying to put on to replace her, and that would be three of them on there, is not our friend. Trust me, he's not our friend. Get out there and vote for Shirley Abrahamson. And when it comes down to
make sure your whole dorm does.
Yes, go get your friends. Make them vote. It's real easy. I don't know exactly what you'd have to do to register if you haven't registered, but I know you can do it on the day of the polls. Yeah. You got to take an identification, something, prove where you're living. Go do it. It's so important. That's something that we gay people and friends of gay people need to do, is to make sure we're aware of who our friends and who our enemies are. You got to help your friends. You got to stick up for women's rights and the rights of minorities, because this is not just a gay struggle. This has been a struggle for everybody, for being equal and being able to do what they need to do. So stick up for your friends. Know who your friends and your enemies are. Linda Mistel is running for county executive against Kathleen Falk, and Kathleen has her problems, but she's a friend. Linda Mistel is not a friend. She was on the school board for years, and she was one of those people, let's not teach birth control, let's not teach anything about sex education in school, let's just teach abstinence. And we all know how well that works, just ask Sarah Palin's daughter. But know who your friends are, know who your enemies are, and get out there and vote. That's the one thing you can do right now. It's very positive. Get your friends to vote. Seriously.
About Wisconsin Supreme Court, can you jump up to the United States Supreme Court and make some comments?
Yeah, well, they've been trying to do that. They've been, and there's there have been some appointments to the Supreme Court I'm kind of really worried about. The Chief Justice, the new Chief, Roberts.
Yeah.
I can't think of him as a friend of ours, but there's something about, and Gordon Baldwin, we were talking about him earlier. Gordon Baldwin was my constitutional law teacher at law school, real right-wing guy. He said something I will always remember. He said, there's nothing like a life appointment to a court to make you a liberal. And I think that does change people's perspective. All of a sudden, you got a life appointment on the Supreme Court. You don't have to kowtow to any special interest. You can think of the country and think what's best for the country.
And before Gordon died, he had mellowed out a lot on gay issues.
Got a lot of what?
He had mellowed out a lot on gay. His wife was much more liberal. Yeah. But he came a long way before he died.
Yeah. And the constitutional reasoning in Connecticut and Massachusetts, Iowa are all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to the Constitution.
Yes. But, you know, it will not. We wouldn't have a unanimous vote like that in Wisconsin right now because we got Annette Ziegler and who's that other guy? Starts with a G. Just got on.
Gableman.
Yeah. He beat a friend of mine and a friend of ours, Lewis Butler, who was just this fantastic man who I had worked with when I first started working in patient rights. That's what I do now. He, just a terrific guy, and I can't believe he got replaced by that creep. But that's the kind, you know, they got two, the Supreme Court's always been kind of, you know, evenly balanced, a little more liberal than right-wing, but now we got two staunch people who will never, ever be our friends. And if they put this other guy on, who's running against Shirley Abrahamson, that'll be time to move to Iowa. At least they got a Supreme Court where they're not, it hasn't been stacked yet, but that's... So vote, that's one thing. The other thing you should do is be able to take care of your health. And in a moment of honesty, I want to say that there, in my generation of gay men growing up, ones I knew from law school, and people who were my age growing up, every one of them who like to be on the receiving end of anal sex is dead. D-E-A-D, dead. Every one of them. Some of the most beautiful people I've ever met my entire life. Terrific people. Grid Hall comes to mind. He was a terrific lawyer and bilingual and dead. You know, roommates I had, dead. And that was because people didn't know that this nasty disease, AIDS, was going around. Now that they know it, you have to be careful. Very careful with your health. You don't want to end up dead. You know, the only reason I'm alive today and sitting here is because I wasn't into it. And I just thank my lucky stars, because I would be dead too. I mean that very seriously. Take care of your health. If you're going to be in anal sex, use a condom. You know, it's whatever. Be careful. Or do something, someone you've known for a long time, you know, who's been tested. But even then, you don't know. I know, quote-unquote, barebacking is coming back in style in some places, and that really disturbs me. Barebacking means not using a condom. And I find that trend disturbing. I work for the state of Wisconsin half-time right now, and I've done that for years. My other job is real estate law, which I do on the side. But I work for patients in the mental health institutes. So if you go to Mendota Mental Health Institute or whatever, then I'm your, you know, rights person basically for that. Doing that for years. That's just sort of an aside as to what I'm doing now. So I do that. I do my law practice, which real estate law is kind of weak right now. I have a lot of free time. I'm playing a lot of games on the computer and stuff. But that'll pick up as the economy hopefully gets better. And thank you all. If you voted for the current president, thank you very much.
Do you have time for, can we do some Q&A?
Sure. I've run out of things to talk about. I think I covered all the topics I wanted to. Any other questions? No?
Yeah, good.
But first of all, do you people know who this is? This is Joe Elder and his wife, Joan. Start with
Joe.
Joanne. Okay. They have been not only wonderful professors here. I don't know exactly what you do, but I know him from Indian Studies.
I'm the academic advisor in sociology.
Okay. They have a gay son, and they have been active in the gay community in the PFLAG. Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. They have been active in the community for years and years and years, and I'm just so proud of them.
But we do span the same generation that you grew up in.
Yeah.
You said you were 47?
I will be 60 in October.
Okay, you're 60. Our son turns 50 this year.
Ah.
At least when he came out, the AIDS epidemic had started, and so...
People were aware.
People were more aware. But he was absolutely... we didn't know he was gay because he was rather shy and tall, handsome, good-looking, and
you say he's married?
Girls. Yeah, girls asked him out, but he never reciprocated. I mean, he went to both dances and so forth. But in any case, he made us very aware of how much prejudice there was. We were pretty stupid to begin with, you know.
Not stupid, ignorant.
It sounds nice.
Unaware.
Unaware, definitely unaware. But I'm worried that this generation isn't being more aggressively fighting for gay rights. Somehow or other, I feel that you're too comfortable and that you're letting the world go along with its, you're comfortable, but there's 3/4 of the world that's not comfortable, and I wish you were more activist.
But part of it is...
Call to activism!
You can't be passive about it. And by the way, also, he's very well-spoken, and therefore you can go ahead and make yourself very well-known to everybody else, too. The whole ROTC program is just a wonderful big portion of your son's
Oh no, Ed was very shy.
He wasn't quiet.
He was firm about, I'm gay. That's it. You know.
That's it.
But he was no activist.
But sometimes the comment is that for the older generation, there's far more prejudice, but because of the younger students today, there's more people simply knowing which is more gay, there's more comfort, therefore it's less of a big issue. And sometimes we'll just say, well, when the old people die off, it'll be much better. Other than the Supreme Court, when they point them young and then they last, for 85 or 90, and that lasts much longer. So part of it is passiveness these days works a little bit more easily than it would have in the past. But you're quite right, people don't. There can be big steps back. Or it won't be progressing.
Yes, there will be big steps back. You have to be vigilant. Like I said, you have to know who your friends are and work on their campaigns or whatever. That's the one thing you can do. And say, go to Shirley Abramson or something and say, I want to work on your campaign and I'm gay. You know, I just think you're terrific and I want to support you. You got to do that kind of thing. Tell people you're out there and help your friends. Because you want to keep your friends around. Yes.
Jim, in terms of where Madison was, I know initially the lesbians and the gay men had very little to do with each other. Was that your experience? And then at what point did they begin to say, we have to put our shoulders to the same wheel?
Well, that's a tough one, because I had some great lesbian friends. Judy Greenspan, I don't know if you ever know her.
Yeah.
She was the first openly gay person running for school board. Wonderful. And she and I were good friends, and I liked Judy a lot. And I remember she invited me to a party, and I was the only gay man there, the rest were lesbians. And some people were really nice, other people were so openly hostile to me, because I was a man, even though I was on the same side with them. It felt kind of weird, you know, it's like, wait a second, I'm trying to be your friend. I'm not the enemy, they're out there, you know,
they're
over there. So,
did the
But and I don't, my I don't know. We had the whole gay movement went through changes as it grew from Madison Alliance for Homosexual Equality. Then it became the 10% Society. It's another name I always hated because, first of all, it implies that only 10% of the people are gay or whatever. But that came from like the Kinsey reports or something like that. But the Kinsey reports actually said a third of the people are heterosexual all the time, and 10% of the people are gay all the time, and the rest are in between. That's what the Kinsey report said. That was their take on it, on sexuality. And this was in the 40s that they wrote this stuff. Or maybe it was Masters and Johnson. It was one of those, but that's where the
Kinsey report was the one that came out with that figure.
Yeah.
It said something like about 40% of men at some point have had sex with a man.
Yeah.
And of those, 10% have only had sex with a man.
Yeah.
But so you get the 10% of the 40%.
Yeah.
But the 10% stuck.
Yeah, 10% stuck. But, you know, we're all bisexual is my take on life. You know? And
did the AIDS epidemic bring unity between the women and the men? Or was that?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
Because after the city council, I sort of like retired from politics, you know. Instead, I went and hung out with these friends and had a good time and didn't go to meetings. Well, not going to meetings was such a luxury. You know? When I was on the council, I was getting paid $200 a month to do it. And I figured it worked out to $1.11 an hour or something like that for all the time, all the meetings, all the crap I put up with. But, so you're not in it for the money. Plus, there's a time in politics where you figure if you go beyond there, beyond where you are, you have to make some compromises. And to run for president, I can't imagine the compromises you have to make. But I didn't want to do that. So that's what I retired. So I'm not going any farther with this. I don't want to continue to the city council for that. So, and I couldn't tell you what happened with the gay community because I sort of withdrew from that, you know, and lived my own life. And hung out on the east side. But I kept all the clippings, and I gave them all to him just recently. I had boxes and boxes of them. Have you gone through them all yet?
I have gone through a bunch. An amazing archive.
Wow.
Yeah, she had like the greatest clip file on the Madison Gay Movement. It's amazing.
And I really want, I was thinking that someday I would, you know, when I was 60, I'd be retired and I could, you know, write a book or something about the whole thing. And then I realized, hey, I'm still having a great time. You know, I'm not about to sit down and do all that. I'll give it to somebody who really wants to. So hopefully you can do something.
Some hungry PhD candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Foolish PhD candidate. Can you tell us about going to the first Mayhee meeting? How'd you find out about it?
God.
Where was it?
There were posters put up on campus, and it was in the basement of a church on... The church is still there. St. Francis House, yes, on University Avenue. And the pastor was very friendly to us, but let us, basically gave us the space. The first time, I walked around the block three times before I went in.
Was it Art Lloyd?
I don't recall.
Yeah.
I never met him, but I walked around the block three times before I went in, and I got the nerve to go in. And I just, you know, realized it was just people like me and who had their own stories. I still, you know people who've been in Madison all that time, who were part of that original group, and then it evolved, of course, into the 10% Society, and then the Madison Gay Liberation Front, and then blah blah blah. You keep asking me if I know what happened with the split in the men and the women, and there definitely was a split, a fracturing, as it were, and that was fracturing was going on in the whole left community. It was, you know. Everyone had a different idea of what needed to be done. Something had to be done. You know, the war was going on. That was kind of radicalizing a lot of people. Everyone had their own take on how radical they should be. But, you know, there was a split between the men and women, and hopefully that's healed, and it should. It's not like we're enemies. Quite the opposite. Other questions?
Did you remember any of the early... like dances or 10 Lang?
Ten Lang. That's another story. Oh.
You're here for it.
I got to tell you about 1976. Wait. When was it? I was working in the Ratskeller. So, 72. When were the Stonewall riots? 69. So this must have been 70, 71. Madison sponsored a nationwide gay meeting. So we just invited, we sent information out to everybody in the entire country and said, come to Madison. And a lot of people showed up. Thousands of people came here. And it was during a semester break, I think spring break.
Thanksgiving.
You're right, it was Thanksgiving. And did you read that in the Star Stories? Anyway, it all sort of blurs together. It was Thanksgiving. There was hardly anybody. The Ratskeller was open, but most of the students were gone. So it got sort of taken over by gay people. There were so many gay people there. It was just so awesome. It was like, wow, I didn't realize. We had a meeting in Great Hall, which we filled with Great Hall full of people. The best part of it, though, was, and it was a feeling of camaraderie. It's like all of a sudden, we're all in this together, fighting this all over the entire, nation. The best part was, anyone familiar with the Ratskeller? There's a sort of round thing in the middle of it. Someone played a song that everybody liked, and all of a sudden, everybody just got up and held hands and went all the way around the circle and did sort of a circle dance and kick. And so it's just these hundreds of people in this big sort of dance around the Ratskeller, and it was like, wow! That was so cool. That was so cool. Then we sponsored dances, and there's the 10 Langdon Street was a dilapidated frat, abandoned frat that we took over for a little while trying to make some kind of community center, and that didn't last long. But it takes a lot of energy to keep something like that up. But the dances were the best part, because there weren't, when I first came here, there was a gay bar, sort of, when I first came here in 1969. It was on the square. It was a little wedge of thing. Chuck E. Cheese was there for a while, I'm not sure. It's Ron Hamilton and the square. There's that little sort of building that looks like a piece of pie, like the Flatiron Building or something. It's sitting there in the corner on the south side. And that was the first gay bar I was in ever. It's like, oh, really? I wasn't old enough to drink because it was 21 then.
Was that the Clinique, the Senate?
Was it the Clinique? I think so. The Clinique. Long time ago. And then the pirate ship opened. The pirate ship was, where Madison Public Library is now? It was down the block on, right off the road that goes around the square. I forget what it is. I never got those streets remembered correctly. They're all so confusing down there. But that was, there was a gay bar at night. In the afternoon, it was a deaf bar. So, they just sort of switched crowds at night, and it was a gay bar, and that's where the Gay Law Students Association used to hang out. But they didn't have they had a liquor license, they didn't have a cabaret license, so they weren't allowed to dance. So every once in a while, a good song come on, we start dancing, and they'd have to tell us to stop that. They'll lose their liquor license.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then Rod's opened.
The back door.
The back door, he opened the back door. Which was on Park Street, right across from one of the sort of nastier student ghetto bars.
Hotel Washington?
No, that was long before the Hotel Washington. But he opened the Hotel Washington, too, when that place closed.
And the Stone Hearth?
The Stone Hearth was right across the street. That's what it was. And a lot of, punk kids used to go, by punk I meant, brutal, vicious people would go to the Stone Hearth, and then there was always this sort of conflict. You had to be careful going out when we went in and out the back door of this bar. It was downstairs, and you had to go out. Be careful of the Stone Hearth when you went out. You didn't know where there were sort of gangs of people hanging out there ready to beat you up or something. So. Conflicts of time.
You mentioned the Moral Union several times. Can you say more about your experiences there?
I worked there for I worked there for 4 years in the rat scaler.
And were you out at that point?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what was the climate like at that point?
I don't know. We just had a good, we had a good time there. We were student employees, so it was all sort of camaraderie, student employees versus the management. You know, that was kind of fun. I helped form MULO, More Union Labor Organization. I didn't start it, but they had just started, and I helped them recruit people.
And were there a fair amount of dances, you're saying?
Yeah, there were dances there. Not so often there. Well, they started it out there, but... Yeah, there were dances there, maybe once a month or something like that for a while. But usually I was working catering or something, and I'd, you know, I'd get to go and meet people.
So, ULO in 73 tries to add sexual orientation to the contract with...
Yes, we tried to...
Tell that story.
Oh, God. It went nowhere. But
what happened? Do you remember? What was the... chronology of the events?
God, I had totally forgotten about that till now. So it's been a long time, 30 years or something. It's hard to remember that crap. But that was part of the MULO's bargaining position, is we want to add sexual orientation to anti-discrimination for the contract. I think we... Yeah, for in the contract. And we were fought tooth and nail by the lawyers for the university. There were a law firm or something, I forget who they were. They represented the university, and they just, like, you know, they stonewalled us. We went on strike. MULO went on strike, not on that issue, but on a lot of other issues.
Yeah.
And I was actually kind of a radical. I was the resident hall workers started a union, too. Resident Hall Labor Association, RISLO, Resident Student Hall Labor Association. And I was trying to start group of all the students being part of a big union called the Campus Labor Federation. And that didn't go very far, but it was an idea. The TAs went on strike. That's why we had the TAs in our help, and they went on strike, and their union got busted during that strike. So they didn't. Everything kind of fell apart. So, yeah.
Regrets?
You know, there are things I regret, mostly things I didn't do. But, and maybe some things I did. But I tell you right now, if I walked out of this building and a car came along and ran me down and killed me, you know, I'm going to be 60 this year. I would die with a smile on my face. I would, because of all the wonderful things, all the wonderful people, all the wonderful things I've done. No, I feel like I've done something with my life, and I've helped change the world a little, just a tiny little bit, and that's fine with me, and I have some great lovers and some great friends, and opportunities like this to talk to people, and, you know, I die with a smile on my face. I have more to go, you know, hopefully, but you know, I hope, that's one of the things, I hope every one of you can say that when you're 60. Every one of you. Because if you can, then it's worth it. Everything you've done is worth it.
Did the young people here have the same feeling I'm the only one in the world?
I have no idea. That's what I started out saying. I have no idea. What tell us. Tell us about your lives. Mark, right?
Yeah, Mark. I went to Catholic high school.
Oh, God help you.
not necessarily I'm the only person in the world, but definitely I'm the only person in my high school, or at least so what I thought. So that was rather difficult, and it was just like, and that kind of like family sense, like, I don't know, parents being Catholic background, stuff like that, it was kind of
a lot of things going against you.
Yeah, it was very lonely, and I do remember a point in high school, I think freshman and sophomore year, where I just really didn't seem to fit in there were two separate lunches, and the first 2 years I was in the first lunch, which was more like the football, sporty players type people.
So they're very great friendly, I hear.
Yeah. So I just never really felt like I was felt really alone those 2 years. But then I'd say, know, as I moved into the second lunch, which was more of like theater geeks and
the
band nerds and choir nerds. That's when I really started to, I mean, but I knew there were other people out there. But once I came into Madison, that's when I really felt open and really felt like, you know, we both, all my gay friends and straight friends, like, I felt, you know, there was a really just a solid group of support. So yeah. I'm really thankful for that.
Absolutely.
Anyone else want to talk? No? How about you in the back with the red hat? Tell us about yourself. What's your name?
I'm Kat.
Kat? Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
As for my family, like my parents, they've always been very GLBT friendly. I mean,
where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Twin Cities.
Twin Cities, okay.
So, it's a pretty good place. I mean, parents would always inform me about whatever, whoever I end up being.
That's great.
Did your parents ever know you were gay or admit it?
Well, yes. I have to start out by saying my father was a Marine Corps drill sergeant.
Wow. Bad start.
Yeah. When we were young, we all had the crew cuts and said yes, sir, to everything he said, that kind of thing. He mellowed out after years, but he had four boys 4 years apart, of which I'm the second one. And we sort of... Four total, 4 years apart. So there's one, and then 4 years me, and then my little brother's 4 years, and the other one's 8 years younger than I am. And by the time we got to the fourth one, my brother Tom, I said, you know, I really want to thank you. You guys put our parents through hell. And they were so nice to me. They were just like, whatever, you know. So my older brother, when he was 18, had to get married to his 16-year-old girlfriend because she was pregnant, you know, and... My parents, who were always like my brother, my mother's always saying, no, you should be like your older brother, you should be a jock, you should be fixing up cars, you know. And then when he got Lucy pregnant, my mother goes, you know, don't be like your older brother. Put a padlock on that zipper. Okay. I won't get a girl pregnant, I promise. But I eventually told my parents. I waited until I was done with college, because I didn't know how they were going to react. And I didn't want them to sort of not let me hang out with my little brother as maybe being a bad influence to him. My brother Tom, who's the one that's 8 years younger. I was afraid they would be like that. My dad said, well, I was doing something was wrong with you. you had bad genes and they came from your mother's side of the family. That's what he said. You had bad genes and they came from your mother's side of the family. But he's mellowed out. And I would go home for like holidays and stuff. They moved back to Upper Michigan, and I'd go back and I'd bring friends, and I'd never explain to who my friends were or what relationship they were. Sometimes they were men, sometimes they were women. I would just bring them home and say, this is my friend so-and-so. Just didn't bother to explain the relationship at all. I guess I had them really confused at a while.
Did you sleep by yourself in your own bedroom?
No, I slept in we'd sleep together on the couch in the living room that folded out. My bedroom was, well, I didn't have a bedroom there. They had moved to a house I had never been in, so I didn't have an old bedroom. So the couch folded out, we'd sleep out there.
Can we hear a little bit more for what it's like living in the dorms now?
Yeah, what is it like? Are you all dorm? You all live in the dorms? What's the atmosphere like?
What's the atmosphere like? How positive are people? What are the problems associated with gay, lesbian, bisexual?
I think the big one is still like derogatory terms used, like, you know. Like,
what that? I'm sorry, what?
Like derogatory terms used is still a big issue. Like, you just, as many times as you say, like, don't use the word gay to mean stupid, don't use the word gay to mean whatever.
Yeah.
You just, like, it's just, it's unfortunate people still use it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think it's.
That's really something that's hard to change.
It is, yeah, because you're just. You're
that's
just,
so gay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And you're just so used to hearing your friends say, and I don't know, hopefully it's something that people. Will grow out of eventually after hearing, you know, why you shouldn't do it so many times.
Or they'll be determined on the
floor. Yeah, I do.
Other things?
I think a majority of the people that I've encountered in dorms have been pretty gay friendly. I think that there are still people who come from maybe smaller towns who maybe don't really talk about these issues and come to Madison and are a little uncomfortable or don't really know how to react. But I think the one thing I found is, I mean, there are always cases of discrimination that take place in the dorms around different issues. But they're getting rarer, at least from my encounter. And I don't know. It seems like of all the issues that I encounter with my residents, all the different discussions I have about people's identities that I talk about, one of the most accepted and supported is gay rights. So,
all right, good.
And there are a few ones that, based on religious, I don't agree with this because, you know, this is my religion, the Bible says, but at least they still respect. They're not, they're not discriminatory, they're not rude at all. They're just, to me, this is wrong, that's what my religion says, but,
I find myself, most cases I find myself, encountering people who are very accepting or at least respecting. I find myself putting up my guard a little bit, though, on weekend nights.
Yeah.
What's different on weekend nights?
Alcohol.
Oh! Only on weekends? What's wrong with the students nowadays? That's good.
You encounter people, they're fine with it in their sober state. But then, under the influence, things get a little bit... I don't know how to describe it, just a little bit more.
Their true feelings start coming out a little bit more? Or?
Well, not true feelings, their irrational side starts coming out a little bit more. But otherwise, I would say it's generally a very accepting atmosphere. You know, if they don't really like it, then I just don't really interact with them very much. But most, I find very few people that's the case with.
So when you say rational side comes out,
For irrational,
yeah.
I don't know, it's just hard to think. Like, when you're out walking on a Friday night, and I can't really think of an example. It seems like the homophobia might be a little bit higher, like the, homophobic remarks or whatever. Yeah. I don't know, there's one point early in the year when I had a boyfriend. I think there was one night we were holding hands in public or whatever, and it was just I was holding hands with him, and then he was holding hands with, it was kind of just like a chain, like link of hands or whatever, and he was holding hands with this other girl, but it was still you just get these remarks that were I don't really know, it was just kind of ooh, what's going on there? I don't know, but it's interesting.
Alcohol reduces
Oh, really?
But what can be nice with that is sometimes I wonder in the respect that's given in university that people will do that politely, but then they won't necessarily have deeper conversations. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when their inhibitions have been loosened up a little bit more, their rational side might come out, and that might allow for a little bit more good discussion. Mm-hmm. So that even if it's the next day when they say, oh, yeah, we'll talk about so and so, there might just be more opportunity for them to become more worldly, more knowledgeable about different people because they don't have to always be rational and show that surface respect when there's underlying thoughts and feelings that they haven't gotten through working with them. So anyway, I'd say it's great that you're able to be out just simply because there's that much more introduction to all these people at very formative ages where it's going to be so much easier for the rest of us, for the rest of our lives.
Any other comments? For living dorm issues.
Well, I can say one thing. I know that I was living in the dorms in 2006 when they passed the gay marriage ban in Wisconsin. And that was, Madison as a city was strongly against it. Strongly against it. And I think there was one other, I think La Crosse was it?
Yeah.
La Crosse did as well. And then the rest of the state, even Milwaukee, which I'm from Milwaukee, voted in favor of the ban.
But not by a very large percentage.
No.
They lost by 5%.
Yeah.
Now, I have real mixed feelings about the whole gay marriage thing. For one thing, I've been a divorce lawyer. That's one of, a lot of the stuff I did when I was first doing practice ended up being divorce law, and I hated it. And I kind of thought the whole marriage thing was a bad model to begin with. And I one part of me says that gays shouldn't follow that model. Create our own model. You know, something better. Yeah. But you know, those things can be taken care of. You can draft wills, you can have power of health care attorneys, you can take
income tax.
Income taxes, no, you get screwed on that. But, and, yeah. But maybe you do, maybe you don't, I don't know. But there are some credits that you can get. I just spent the morning doing my income taxes. So, a little fresh in my mind. But there are credits that married couples get, and you won't get them as a gay couple. But there's a lot of things. It's not so bad. You know, it's not terrible that you're not allowed to have this. But so I'm telling you, I have mixed feelings about it. On the other hand, when Iowa Supreme Court said that, I just was floored. It was like awesome. It's like, hey, you know, here's people who finally got the message. Iowa helped elect a black president, and then they vote. Then all of a sudden, they're a gay rights state, gay marriage state. It's like, who'd have thunk? You know, and it's happened in the heartland. Just like you were saying, that the people think it's sort of a coastal phenomenon that this stuff happens. It's happening right here.
Yeah, especially and Wisconsin passing accommodations in 1982, being the first state in the nation.
Yeah, and the, that was the person who was the architect of that was David Clarenbach, who I can now say publicly was my lover. I wasn't allowed to say it at the time because his mother was still alive, Kate Clarenbach, and she
was
accepting. Pardon?
She was accepting that he was gay.
Well, I don't know. I've been around him when she showed up, and the look she would give me, like, she was not a very good mother-in-law, I'll tell you that. Not a very friendly mother-in-law. So I just didn't say anything, and it was his political career and his choice not to be open about it.
And he tried very hard to appear heterosexual when he got married.
Well, yeah, I got married in the end, but David, I think, is bisexual, you know, in the truest sense of the word. And he got married because he wanted to get married, but it's the woman he got married to. Kind of boyish, I thought. That was just my opinion. Anyway, they did it through a coalition.
Religious support.
They got strong support from all the churches. They built a coalition that convinced the legislature and the governor this was a good thing to do.
Lee Dreyfus.
Republican governor. That's what I'm talking about, friends. You got to cultivate your friends, and you help them, they help you, you know, because there are enemies out there, and don't forget they're real and they're out there. And, you know, I wish the Anita Bryants and the Reverend Dillenbaughs of the world weren't out there, but there they are, and they could come back real easy, and they're trying, subtly, you know, stacking the Supreme Court is a very smart move on their part. So Wisconsin Supreme Court would never have a unanimous decision that, and actually it was passed as a constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
But when that election happened that you were talking about earlier, I was not that disappointed because it was like, if that had happened in 1969 when I first came out, the vote would have been 0.1% to 99.9%. You know, the fact that it was so close really was amazing to me. It's awesome. Things have changed. They'll change more.
It's still at their constitutional.
It's still in the Constitution, and that's a bad thing. Yes, it's a bad thing.
So it might last much longer than what society would be.
Yes, yes. It's, and that was their strategy.
Yeah, it's very smart. It's sort of hard to achieve.
And they're, now they're trying to stack the Supreme Court to make sure it stays that way.
Correct.
I just remember being in the dorm that night when the bullets started coming in. I think a lot of us were under the assumption that it would pass. I think from talking to people, looking at some of the polling figures coming. And then when it finally was decided that the ban had passed, it was like you could just feel the entire building sort of sagging. Like everybody were just, we were just walking around, we were just sitting in the lounge, and we were just in silence.
It's a student vote that
comes. Yeah.
More likely to push the very positive.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people worked really hard on it. Fair Wisconsin, which was an organization that really took charge on this and took the lead on this, was really out there and getting people to vote, even to a point of being a nuisance because it would call you every day and tell you to get out. But
a lot of that sort of same structure and those same people worked on electing our current president.
Mm.
So I think that was not a bad thing to have those coalitions out there.
Yeah. And if anything, for the United States Supreme Court, this president makes a huge difference.
God, if they put another one on there, I was like, oh, well, we'll see.
But Obama didn't, I think, didn't he say that he wasn't necessarily in favor of gay marriage, though?
Yeah. But it beats the hell out of George Bush.
No,
excuse me.
That's true.
I think beats the hell out of George Bush. I would beat the hell out of George Bush. I could, but I Secret Service, I didn't say that. About time to wrap this up, I think. Anyone else have any other burning questions they got to ask or want to talk about? Or?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you two again. I've said it several times tonight, but really, seriously.